You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. During the course of the past week, I came across an article on Gizmodo.com.au titled "The Dirty Backstabbing Mess Called Betamax versus VHS." This article brought back memories of a format war which, at the time, were the likes we'd never seen before. Two rival formats of similar technology vying for dominance in the then very juvenile home video market. For those of you not old enough to remember, these were two domestic half-inch videotape formats which went head-to-head back in the early 80s. But as history now tells, there was only room for one in the marketplace, and we all know who the winner was. Betamax was a home video cassette tape recording format developed by Sony, released way back in May 10, 1975. Betamax had no guard band and used azimuth recording to reduce crosstalk. That's according to Sony's own history webpage. The name came from the double meaning beta, being the Japanese word used to describe the way signals were recorded onto the tape, and from the fact that when the tape ran through the transport, it looked like the Greek letter beta. The suffix max came from maximum to suggest greatness. So what was wrong with Sony's Betamax? Well, technically nothing. In fact, those in the know knew that Betamax had the edge over VHS. The VHS format was a result of two companies, Matsushita, who we now call Panasonic, and its independent subsidiary, JVC. To quote Gizmodo, these guys, it's JVC and Matsushita, were amongst the biggest manufacturers in the world, dwarfing Sony many times over. Matsushita, known for efficiency, not innovation, tended to focus on big, boring appliances, TVs, refrigerators, air conditioners, with a small team, branded Technics, devoted to dominating the hi-fi realm. JVC was all about TVs and audio gear and had decent video know-how. So was it VHS's sheer volume, brand dominance, and product saturation in a global marketplace that caused the demise of Betamax? Or was it the marketing battle that would make consumers choose one over the other? My guess is that it was a bit of both. It's worth noting that the beta format continues to this day in the professional video market. Sony have patents which stitch up the IP of the format, which means only Sony can make beta tapes for standard definition and high definition formats such as digital Betacam and HDCam. The housing remains the same, but what's contained within has certainly changed through the years. In modern times, we're still witnessing format wars. The most recent was that between Blu-ray and HD DVD, and we all know the outcome of that. Fortunately, this was not as a prolonged battle as it was with VHS and Betamax. The collateral damage of the Beta VHS war was millions of Betamax owners globally. I recall Betamax held just as much shelf space in our local video library at its peak. When the consortium, led by Toshiba, threw in the HD DVD towel, the damage was minimal due to the fact that the emerging technology was just so new. In today's professional video production environment, Sony have definitely won the war, as they have the decks and formats which are truly industry standard. They have a massive share of the marketplace. Panasonic are there, and try as they might, they cannot reclaim that share. So at the end of the day, when Sony's beta format is alive and well, living in TV studios and production houses globally, who do you think won the war?
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
we'll check out Firefox's latest incarnation. We'll get the latest on the NBN rollout, or lack of it. A NASA hacker was just searching for UFOs. Microsoft plan to open shop right next door to Apple. And beware the phony bids on eBay. First up, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the Australian Air Force website is hacked in response to violence against Indian students. All systems go for Australian PC resellers. The great Tasmanian NBN illusion and NASA red-faced over missing Apollo 11 videotapes. Welcome to Tech Talk News. A number of violent attacks against members of Australia's Indian community has prompted a hacker to deface the website of the Royal Australian Air Force. Mainstream media has given considerable attention of late to Indian students who have allegedly been racially targeted as victims of street crime. The Defence Department was quick to point out last week that only the external Air Force website had been altered and that no sensitive information was compromised. The message read,
"This is a warning message to Australian government. Immediately take all measures to stop racist attacks against Indian students in Australia. Else I will pawn all your cyber properties like this one."
The ABC's Lexi Metherill spoke to a representative from the Australian-based Federation of Indian Students last week. Mr. Gautam Gupta said he disagreed with the hacker's method, but he supported the sentiment of the message.
His views were very clearly not about Australia, but about the Australian government's inaction. In his view, he's called the Australian government for action and he's asked the Australian government to take some action to stop these attacks on Indian students, which is very much the view that I think most of the people hold, that is the Australian government has been extremely lazy in stemming these issues.
The Australian Defence Department says that the website breach is currently under active investigation. Research group IDC has reported that commercial buyers of personal computing equipment re-entered the market in the second quarter in Australia, putting the market back on track for a recovery in the second half of this year. Analyst for IDC Australia, Mr. Philippe Rago, told IT Wire that the strength of the second quarter, which included surprising strong consumer sales, had put the Australian market on target to meet IDC's forecast for modest year-on-year growth in 2009 of 1% over last year. Mr. Rago described the signs as modest but encouraging and said the Australian PC market was looking forward to a buoyant Christmas sales period. News outlets across the country last week criticised the Australian government's efforts to introduce the national broadband network into Tasmania. Last week, Tech Talk Radio reported that the new Basslink fibre optic cable had been commissioned and that customer data had begun flowing for the first time, and that while test traffic had been flowing for some months, ISPs Aurora and Internode had now begun using the cable to carry customer data. But Tasmanian Liberal Senator Mr. Guy Barnett said last week that the announcement is spin, designed to cover up the fact that the federal government is already behind in its rollout schedule. And Mr. Andrew Connor, a Hobart-based IT professional who runs the consumer lobby group Digital Tasmania, agrees that the announcement is misleading.
Tasmanians are still in limbo with their fast broadband access when it comes to the NBN. At the moment, there's only ADSL 1 in many places, and ADSL 2 from other providers in just a couple of exchanges. People would still expect a rollout to be cables rolling down their streets with trucks, guys in cherry pickers, or people digging up the nature strip to put those fibre optic cables into their homes.
IT Wire's Stuart Corner agrees. Mr. Corner wrote in his blog last week that despite the Basslink cable being switched on, the federal government has made no timetable announcement for the NBN rollout. No one knows who will get what services and when, and no details have been released about how service providers will connect to the network. Mr. Corner went on to say that rather than the opening of Basslink being an opportunity to talk up real progress on the Tasmanian NBN, it looks much more like a high-profile embarrassment that has thrown the spotlight on the lack of any such progress. The federal government said that Basslink was stage one of construction and assured Tasmania that procurement of key inputs will commence shortly and that further construction will soon begin. And 40 years ago, on Friday last week, three astronauts in Apollo 11 blasted off towards the moon and hundreds of millions of people watched the mission via grainy television footage. The ABC last week reported that while footage sent back to Earth by the astronauts was recorded on videotape, NASA has now confessed to losing the original footage, which was much higher quality than that seen on television 40 years ago, and that the tapes may have even been recorded over to save storage space. Part of NASA's search for the missing tapes has found that engineers in Parkes, Australia, may have made their own copy of the moon landing video on 2-inch tape machines, but the whereabouts of these tapes is also unknown. Mr. Dick Navsgio is a television specialist at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center.
What was important is somebody actually modified a 2-inch machine at one location called Parkes, Australia, to record these just to see if they could do it. These two tapes consisting of an hour each, approximately, are missing. We are still open to finding those 2-inch tapes. That is something that came out of the woodwork and is something that we were shocked about, but we don't know where they are.
The ABC's Kim Landers reported last week that NASA plans to release what's left of the fully restored Apollo 11 video in a few months' time. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
And Lydia Davis, all the way fresh from Palo Alto in the United States, joining us live in the studio.
How long is that in viewing time?
About 84 minutes. Yeah.
What a rip-off. Who's this with? Three.
This is three.
Oh, good on them.
The sales department is writing checks that the network can't cash.
We're in Palo Alto, like, you know, the heart of Silicon Valley, and to get a decent signal, that's just a joke. Well, you get coverage when there's coverage, and when there's not, you don't. And that's how it is.
So you've got to work around for the Android market now for your Android.
It's the equivalent of what Optus do with their mobile broadband.
You unplugged all the fax machines.
Yeah, go on.
The only thing limiting it on netbooks is there aren't many netbooks, if any, that are touch-driven yet.
I just want to click an Xe and have this work.
Internet villain of the year.
How much power is that?
She's like Superwoman.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Just learnt something new about my mobile phone. And that was Dr. Ron kicking the bench there.
Ow.
If you press star to go, instead of hash to make it go silent, turns Bluetooth off. How about that? I just learned something very new. Hello, everybody.
Write it down.
Hey, I will. You learn something every day. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio, everybody. I'm Andrew McComb. Across the bench, the regulars are back. None of these blow-ins from last week. And as you note, the culinary repertoire that we had on the bench, which if you looked on TwitPic last week, you would have seen Dr. Ron eyeing them off at a... That was rather unfortunate, really. You were working away on your laptop.
I was looking at my laptop screen, but it was quite a funny photograph, though, Andrew. How are you this week?
Yeah, very good. Very good. We've got JD, Dr. Ron, and Graham has made a return from Tasmania to check out the broadband. So we've got a first-hand report.
I talk into this thing, right?
That's it.
I'm trying to remember how this all works.
Don't they have those things down south? Of course they do.
They don't have them where Lid lives.
No, they don't, do they?
They must follow you around or something over there.
Anyway. Did you have trouble keeping Lydia in front of a microphone?
Yeah, she was dozing off and on the wall over there. She just off she go to sleep. Anyway, yeah, she's in Queensland at the moment, so she's gone back 20 years.
Right.
No, that's just a joke. Hi to everyone in Queensland.
I tell you what, that's what I felt like in Tassie. Sorry, Tassie. But
no, it is. It's a bit like that, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've got to be very careful long. What we say on the radio now,
not,
I think.
Not for long. They're going to get the national broadband network down there.
Absolutely. Well, maybe. Mm. We'll talk about that first up too this evening. So, hello to everyone listening around the country, wherever you might happen to be, and on the net, live on the stream, via the 3WBC website. Come and have a bit of a listen, or via the Tech Talk Radio website. Everyone's welcome. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. You can come and have your 2 cents worth. Have a chat to some of our regulars that are sitting there already.
You can also have a look at us. Don't forget.
Oh, yeah, I keep forgetting that.
ustream.tv/techtalkradioau. We're broadcasting now under the Live Now banner. Click on Go to Show page and you'll be able to see us.
We have lots of correspondence, people that have sent us email during the course of the week. I had a chuckle at a few from some of the other things I did today too. Before I tell you about my strange occurrences during the course of the tech week, off you go, Dr. Ron.
TARDIS3, regular Tech Talk contributor, says, here's a speed test from my local Macca's. Golden Arches. Pretty slow, hey, but it works and it's free. Really? Kind regards.
No,
from
you got to click the big.
What speeds did he get?
You got to click the big coffee cup, don't you? I've tried it to the one down here locally.
Is that what it is? I've tried it locally as well. It works quite well. Now, TARDIS was getting download speed of 141 kilobits per second, which is not too bad.
That's not bad for free Wi-Fi. That's not bad at all for a fast food takeaway outlet.
But upstream, he was getting over 200 kilobits per second.
Oh, I wonder what sort of connection they had. Telstra provide all that stuff through Chuckies and those sort of places.
They have the free wireless hotspots there, and all you need to do is turn on your mobile device and you can access the internet from a lot of...
Well, no, it's a little bit more than that. You initially get redirected to some big splash page with a logo
terms
in the middle of it.
And conditions and things.
And, yeah, you've got to agree to the conditions before it lets you out.
Yeah, that's fair
enough.
And,
yeah, the only time I've ever tried to use it was from my phone, and the splash page just did not...
You couldn't see it on your phone, could you?
I was scrolling around up and down and left and right trying to find what I needed to click on the phone, and it was impossible, so I gave up.
And by the time you finished your cheeseburger, it was all too hard, and you drove away.
That's right.
I must admit, I've got the local GP where we go has got Wi-Fi.
Oh, yes.
And it's just an open network, so you can park out the front and download the Arts Content. I'm not going to tell you where they are, but it's one of those things where I was surfing around on the mobile the other way, and I go, what's this thing here? And it just came up default D-Link.
Yep.
I've gone, oh, there's a red rag to a bull. There's no padlock there. Let's see if I can connect. Ka-ching! Thank you very much.
Yep.
So, yeah, there are some people that offer that service, but potentially probably not the most secure of environments.
I've got some birthday greetings.
I saw this.
To Daniel Caruana. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Daniel. Daniel's been travelling around Australia for the last 15 months with
happy
his girlfriend Samantha.
To Daniel. We don't normally do this, but yes.
And during this time, Daniel's become a huge fan of Tech Talk for some reason.
Hello, Daniel. And you're in radio range tonight.
He is, yes. Due to limited coverage of Optus 3G, the little birdie tells me, in most rural towns, he goes for months at a time without internet, which is a torture for a tech head like him, apparently. Mm. But Daniel's been able to get his technological fix from Tech Talk podcasts, and tomorrow, Tuesday, is Daniel's birthday, and he's listening live to Tech Talk Radio right now. Happy birthday, Daniel.
Daniel, well done, that man. Interested to know his traversing the countryside, where he's actually been. He must have been out to some of the outer suburbs, if you haven't been able to get mobile broadband on Optus.
Yes.
Send us an @tweet message and show us all your tweet pics. We want to see where you are and what you've been up to.
Cool.
Now, speaking of, I'm travelling to Sydney on Wednesday. I'm going up to the SMTPE convention, which is sort of like a CBIT, but it's more for broadcasters.
SMTPE?
No, the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers has their little shindig every so often up at Darling Harbour.
Society of Motion Picture Television Engineers. Okay, yep.
And there's all sorts of good toys, so hopefully I'm going to catch up with people and talk about digital broadcasting, all sorts of things. Have a look at the toys that they've got on offer. Talk about workflows. Might be some good stuff for Tech Talk Radio there. So maybe next week. Maybe.
You're going to get us some good gear for Ustream?
A t-shirt or something. What?
No, like we want video amplifiers and cameras.
More cameras in this joint than you know what to do with.
It's never enough, is it, JD?
No.
And get another portal in on the Mac over there, so anyway.
10-way USB.
Well, there's USB ports here going to a good home. We certainly haven't filled them all up yet.
You've got a few spares. Have you got to get more panellists in? Probably a few on the chat that would want to come in, but hey, we've got enough. Anyway. Hey, some interesting other news this week. I learnt the hard way. The Internet Explorer 8 is not what it should be to some software. And I've never, until I found out about a little bug in IE8, for those of you who are connoisseurs of editing software, I use a package called Avid, or Avid is the manufacturer, and I use Media Composer, and I use Symfony, two individual programs for dealing and editing sound. In fact, most of the stuff you hear on the show has been done through Avid. Now, I found out that Avid does not like Internet Explorer 8, or is it Internet Explorer 8 doesn't like Avid?
What happens?
What happens is I did an upgrade on the course of the weekend and my audio just stopped.
Ooh.
Just stopped. It just got to a point where it tried to initialize audio and just hung. So you could sit there for half an hour and the same screen would be up while it was trying to initialize
things. Is this when IE8 was running?
No, this is when IE8 was installed.
Oh.
So
the update you did was IE8's update, not an Avid update.
Yeah. No, nice. No, it was an Avid update, but nice. it interacted with IE8. It's obviously putting new stuff onto the system. Mm. And I wouldn't in a million years have picked IE8 upsetting an audio, a broadcast type system, which was going to give it grief. Anyway, thanks to the Google support tech help desk that you have with Google, where you just type in your error code and away you go.
Somebody else in the world will have had the same problem.
It's all of a sudden the Windows updates, because Windows or Microsoft have just turned IE8 into a fairly important upgrade. They're trying to get people to their systems to update it. So anyone with an Avid editing system that's plugged into the internet's going to probably find this huge problem in the next few weeks. So if you are that way inclined and your Avid Express final, whatever it is, doesn't work, chances are it's uninstall IE8 and you'll be fine.
So that's what you had to do. You had to uninstall.
Yep, roll back IE8. To IE7 and everything worked a treat.
Are Avid making any comment about it?
They have acknowledged the bug.
So Avid are acknowledging that it is a bug in their software.
Yeah, I'll talk to Avid about it on Wednesday when I'm up there at SMTE and see what they say. Oh yeah, we know about that. That's probably about all I'll get. So there you go. That was my technical dilemma for the week. IE8 and television production gear just don't go.
I've been getting a lot of warnings on Windows computers saying that updates are ready to install, and when I look at the details, it's Internet Explorer 8.
Ah.
Should I do that update even...
Not if you've got an Avid.
No, we've established that. Good. Assuming I don't have an Avid, should I do that update?
Oh, why not? Even the fast lane.
But even if I'm not an IE8 or an Internet Explorer user, should it still be done?
Absolutely, yes, you should do that update, because there are some things that use Internet Explorer even though you're not aware of it. So they've moved it into that security update because it's now going to be more secure than IE7, So, yes, you should install that even if you don't use it regularly.
I was wondering about that because I thought I don't use Internet Explorer, but there may be stuff that's packaged with this that is important.
That's right. And the other thing is that most of your Windows updates, if you've gone the recommended setup for Windows, which automatically installs updates at 3 a.m. or something like that.
Yes.
Nothing works when you get into the office the next morning. Have you noticed?
Yes, your machine will have rebooted overnight.
Well, don't you hate that? It says we've automatically done this for you.
Yeah, well, you're
good. Thanks.
You can turn it off if you've got a particular situation where you need your machine to stay running overnight. But in general, it's better to leave it on because it means that even though you've got to relaunch your applications or whatever, it means your machine is up to date when you come back in the morning. You don't have to wait for it to do the updates.
Hmm.
But IE8's the exception. It's one of these Windows updates that won't install automatically if you're not in front of the computer.
We're going to be talking a little bit about web browsers, particularly Firefox's 3.5 very shortly. I think there's a few people in this room that had a bit of a experience with it, but Walt Mossberg has put it through the ringer. We'll hear from him later on in the show too, which is a very interesting report coming up. We should actually try and make an effort to stick to the rundown this evening, and with a bit of luck, we might get through half of it.
Oh.
I do these for a reason, and believe it or not, and chances are 9 times out of 10 we get so distracted on this show, but all for good reason. Let's kick off with the first little bit about the National Broadband Network. Apparently, it's going to be beginning in Tasmania, but it all is not what it seems. We've had this NBN promise to us probably for the last few months, and what have we seen? Well, not a lot. Now, Graham, has there been any talk down in Tassie or anything like that about, because you've been down there for a bit, or is it just all passe?
Well, look, I didn't go chasing tech information while I was down there. I was down there for other reasons, so I certainly didn't notice that people were excitedly talking in the streets about their upcoming national broadband network.
Because isn't the new fibre, the old fibre that they've discovered in with the power lines, isn't that going to be part of the NBN?
I don't know.
Is that how it goes? Because they're not dragging a new cable across Bass Strait, are they?
Well, I haven't heard any plans about that. There's certainly a lot of capacity in that Basslink cable that's now available for use.
I think they're going to sell it back to the government,
They may well do, or even if Telstra get involved in the NBN, Telstra might buy some space on it as well.
There was an interesting...
Anything's possible.
Interesting thing in the paper today I was reading that the government will still maintain ownership even after, or controlling interest after, and I don't know how they're going to do that. I didn't really read on too much. It was one of those days today. But the government's still going to maintain a lot of active interest and input and probably take some form of control over it once it goes private down the track. So,
okay.
But Mr. Conroy did get out. We'll hear from him in just a second. But before that, the Ziggy Sulkowski, do you remember him? CEOs of phone company?
Yeah.
And
former CEO of the big phone company.
That's right, the big one. And another former chief executive officer, Chris Anderson, who was the CEO of the other phone company, so we've covered Telstra and Optus in one fell swoop, have both been vying for the chairmanship of the crucial National Broadband Network. And apparently... Ando's out, and Ziggy's sort of the last man standing at the moment, so unless they can find someone better in the next little bit. So
they've emailed their resumes in, have they?
Apparently so. They've applied online to the particular organisation concerned. So I thought, there we go. Some old blood coming back into the realms of telecommunications in this country. So, but anyway, during the course of the week, our current incumbents communications minister, Mr. Stephen Conroy, went down to Tasmania just to rally the troops and all that sort of stuff. And this is what he had to say about the current position and rollout, or lack thereof, of the NBN.
Stage one of the NBN rollout will deliver wholesale only, open access broadband network services in the second quarter of 2010. This will begin with the release of a tender for the procurement of fibre optic cable to supply the rollout.
Now, a tender... Did I hear him right there? We're going to start this process by putting it out to tender. Now, and that's just for buying the fibre optic cable. They're not talking about laying it, switching it on, or anything else. They want to buy the stuff.
We got all excited last week about the Basslink fibre optic cable being livened up and ISPs like Aurora and Internode starting to use it. But the government's come under a huge amount of fire during the week for... They've been criticised for exactly this. You know, it's just there's no
no proper plan. There are no benchmarks that have been established so we can gauge the progress of the commissioning of the cable.
Exactly right.
Certainly the Tasmanian Liberal Senator, Guy Barnett, he was having a go at the federal government.
Funny you should mention that. This is what he had to say.
They promised Tasmanians and Australians the rollout from July this year, this month. That is not going to start until April next year. What they have announced today is a tender process. A tender process, and that's it.
A tender process to buy the cable. Doing a whip around. They're going to go and see Olic, the big blue cable manufacturer down the road. Hey, can you send us a price for 10,000 kilometres of blue stuff?
Please. Yeah, exactly.
Is this all smoke and mirrors? Are we really seeing value for money here?
Well, the government says we are. The government says that this is stage one of the construction of the project.
Popping it out for tender. Sorry, I'm cynical about this.
Well, I am too. We were talking about weasel words last week, about all these ridiculous, nonsensical words that mean nothing, and there was certainly a lot of them coming from the federal government. They assured Tasmanians that procurement of key inputs would shortly commence for key stakeholders and all this sort of stuff. In the fullness of time, we'll be going forward on a proactive basis with our stakeholders and, we're going to procure key inputs.
Seems a bit strange that they're going to tender, but they haven't got a chairman for their organisation. I'm not even sure that they've got an organisation, have they?
Have a look on ASIC. Just log in and see if you can see MBN.
Proprietary Limited.
Hang on, that's a TV station in Newcastle, isn't it?
Yeah, it's taken. Yeah, it'll have to be something else.
It'll have to be .net.
It's maddening, isn't it? So they've come under a huge amount of criticism during the week for this very problem.
Anyway, there you go. There's a bit of an update on the wonders that is hopefully going to be the National Broadband Network sometime. He did also say that he, being Conroy, said that it'll be... Hopefully, the tender will be finished by the second quarter of... What did I hear him right? The second quarter?
2010.
Yeah, good. Christmas will come again. By the way, did you know Telstra's rolling out 100 megabit per second HFE cable? That'll be out by Christmas, apparently. Yeah, go Telstra. Dear. Anyway, I had a telemarketing call from Telstra today, but I won't go into that. They're actually out there trying to flog their wares again at the moment, so...
Maybe they need to drop some HFC cable under Bass Strait beside the Bass Link.
That'd be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, bit of competition.
Perhaps all of it. In Bass Strait.
Put all of the HFC cable and drop it into Bass Strait. Don't bother connecting any either end.
I thought, you're getting very cynical there, Graham.
Well, he's just been to Tasmania. He's seen what it's like firsthand.
Oh, okay. Well, raise the sea levels, put all their HF.
Now, you had pretty good NextG coverage down there, though, didn't you? You said it was working all right for you.
Yeah, the NextG was working great for me down there. I didn't have any problems. I was... listening to one of the Windows streams over it at the same time as I had the chat open and the Ustream streaming the video, all happening through my mobile phone. It didn't seem to be giving any trouble. I did have a problem where it has a tendency to drop out, but I think that's an issue between my phone and my computer rather than an issue with NextG. And I did have an issue where it rebooted just before the odd spot, which annoyed me, but that was an issue.
Was it a good odd spot, Dr. Ron? I can't remember. What was it?
I can go back and have a look at my notes.
That's all right. Yeah.
But that's just because I haven't yet got around to replacing the Windows 7 beta, which now reboots every 2 hours for me.
Oh, good. Oh. Yeah. Not long to go now. We'll get the real one very shortly. Yeah. Looking forward to that.
Is that to force you to upgrade? Is that what's doing that?
It's to stop you using the beta beyond the beta period, yeah. Because obviously they don't want to be giving away free operating systems.
Isn't there a registry hack or something? Can't you fix that?
Oh, come on.
Well, actually, I want to get around to installing the RC, the release candidate version, so just to give it a shot before the main one comes out.
Why not? Just hang out another 2 weeks. It'll be out very shortly. End of the month for the from manufacturing to developers and to partners.
Mm.
Be good. Looking forward to getting it, giving it a run for its money.
Definitely.
Hey, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, JD, and Graham in this evening. Something also that caught my eye going past. Remember OneTel?
I remember OneTel.
Your friends about OneTel.
Yeah, they went. Packer was involved with it at all.
They went, yes.
Really south, didn't it? And their assets got stripped and the ACCC tore them apart. Anyway, one of the directors of that company was a man by the name of Brad Keeling. Do you remember him?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Mm.
Well, some Finnish technology company actually leaked some information which said that the Australian parent company had a director on it by the name of Brad Keeling. Now, I thought underneath the auspices of the outcomes of legal things down the track that he wasn't allowed to do anything like that anymore, but I could be wrong, just my opinion. But anyway, looks like OneTel lives in some form of incarnation on a director of another company. So
yes, I think
who was the other guy? I can't remember. I'm trying to think of his name.
There was Kerry Packer.
No, the other guy. Not Kerry,
little Jody.
Jody Rich.
Yeah. Jody Rich.
He was a fall guy. He took some of that as well. So
and Rodney Adler, I think it was.
Oh yeah, he's still behind bars, I think, at the moment, isn't he? Or is he out on good behaviour now? He was good boy. He got his laptop in behind there and started a shelf company or something like that. Hey, there was a bit of a nasty incident in Jakarta during the course of the week too, which we won't need to go into huge details because you're probably all aware of it. But once again, Twitter came to the forefront and breaking the news to the world. A lot of people were actually tweeting it way before the mainstream again. We talked about this with Michael Jackson too. So, there you go. Within seconds of the first bombing, descriptions of the screams and carnage were sent across the world in cyberspace. So... maybe that's why newsroom people just sit there watching trending news.
But how many of those tweets were from people actually at the scene or in the vicinity of the terrorist attacks, and how many were just people rebroadcasting the news headlines?
That's a very good question. According to the Courier Mail at 7:50 local time, Daniel Tumia wrote on his Twitter account, "Bomb at Marriott's and Ritz-Carlton, Cunningham in Jakarta." And then seconds later, two bombs go off inside the Ritz. So I am here, not kidding, as sort of the tweets that were sent out. So the very first tweets were actually on the spot reports, first-hand accounts.
And this is something we talked about with the Michael Jackson thing as well. It's probably quite natural that you will get a lag with the mainstream media who need
to check their facts,
check facts and confirm things before they... go on, and we found out what can happen when some media outlets went with some news last 2 weeks ago now that they hadn't fully checked and confirmed, that they'd probably taken from a rumor off a social networking site and hadn't confirmed and turned out to be wrong. So yeah, there's probably a good reason why there's a lag there and why those on the spot reports come out. But you've got to treat them as that. There's a sort of on the spot, hearsay. Rather than, something that's confirmed and absolutely accurate.
Where it's going to be extremely useful is when you have the on-the-spot reports and people that are at the scene and giving you updates, but you've got to be able to filter through those messages and messages from everyone just rebroadcasting news headlines.
That's right, yes.
It's up to people individually what they find useful, but I would think it would be more useful if you were getting the information from people that are actually there, but it's just how people use the service, isn't it? Use the network.
Absolutely. Anyway, so there you go. Another excuse, a use, whatever, a justification of Twitter. Have a look if you haven't already. I must admit, there's been a lot of spam out there on Twitter at the moment too, and I think they've been fairly vigilant in keeping it clean. I noticed the TTR 2008 had a adult movie star following us there for a moment.
Cool.
It was a bit hard to miss the icon, but at the end of the day, I had to click the go away, don't bother me button that Twitter actually gives you, but... just the actual ease of access these days on these mobile devices that we all have, whether they be Apple's, whether they be Sony Ericsson's, whether they even be Nokia's and things like that, the ability to have that at your fingertips whilst on the train on the way home, I think is terrific these days. So, and of course, everyone's got a camera these days too, don't they?
Everyone's got a camera. And that's why
TwitPic, you'll see the pictures up there in a flash as well.
There's a whole raft of those sorts of services.
Absolutely.
Now.
Speaking of these devices, Palm. You used to have a Palm, didn't you? Do you have a Trio or something? Was it you?
No, I had a Palm 3C about 10 or 15 years ago.
Well, this doesn't apply to you, but if you have a Palm at the moment and you use iTunes to actually do some updating on it, don't.
Well, you can't.
Is the moral of the story. Well, iTunes 8.2.1 update sends pre-users off on a merry goose chase. They've got to try and find alternatives because it'll no longer talk or do anything like that. And Palm has actually confirmed that the pre-owners can no longer use Apple's iTunes to sync their smartphones to Macs or PCs.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Speaking of interesting things, I gave my wife last Christmas a iPod. It finally found its way to iTunes on the weekend. So we've got our first songs on it. And it's not bad. 7 months after the gift was delivered.
So what's she been doing with it all this time?
Playing with the menus, getting used to it.
No, it's been sitting on a box on the shelf. I go, how long is that going to sit there before it comes out? But no, she's finally got it out of the box now, which is pretty good.
It's been three generations released since then.
Absolutely.
Are you going to get her into podcasting? Or just one step at a time, small baby steps?
She has heard of podcasting now. She's actually quite interested. I told her that what RSS stands for was really simple. syndication, because she thinks an iPod is a complex device.
Mm, two-thirds of that abbreviation is designed to encourage people.
Inspire confidence.
Yeah,
really,
it's okay. It's not difficult syndication. Yeah.
And it's like anything Apple, it's designed for people who want ease of use. That's what their main selling point is. So anyway, miracles can happen just yet. Speaking of other interesting things, Sony plans a music stream coming up to compete with the likes of pay TV, in particular the MTV channel. So if you've got a PlayStation 3 connected up to the broadband, very soon you'll be able to watch Sony's new rock and roll live video music stream. And I don't know whether it's going to be free or charge, but potentially they'll ping you for it down the track.
So through your PlayStation 3, you connect to a Sony service and it streams...
Music clips
to you.
Correct.
Ooh, okay.
That came out of the blue, didn't it?
That's good.
I think it's a good concept.
It is a good concept.
And it's certainly another option to get media to your TV set or whatever it is that you're doing. But yeah, just to be able to tune in via your PlayStation these days, a bit like using a mobile phone to listen to a streaming across mobile broadband, really. It's just one of those other applications that we can do online these days. So very good. Now, of course, if you sort of had your head under a rock, 40 years ago today, what were you doing? Do you remember?
I wasn't even alive.
You were. You were alive.
40 years ago today.
40 years ago today.
I was?
Yeah, I thought you were. Maybe you weren't.
No, I wasn't.
Maybe you're not that
I'm
old.
I'm pretty sure I wasn't.
I was. Probably going to kinder or something.
Yeah, all those sort of things. So just bear with me, boys. I think we should all walk out of the studio.
I don't think I was alive.
No, you probably weren't. Yeah. You were just an apple in your mother's eye.
Worried now.
Let's wander outside and shall we? And let's go out into the lovely, cool... Do you know, it was a very summery day here in Melbourne today. Did everyone notice that?
It was quite nice.
Yeah, it was 20-odd degrees or something like
windy.
That.
I can hear crickets.
Can you? Well, we're outside now.
Oh, looking up in the sky.
Can you see that big moon up there that hasn't risen yet? It doesn't come up till 6:50 tomorrow morning.
It's not getting any warmer out here, is it?
Nice. No, it's a bit brisk. But, you know, 40 years ago today, that big moon that's just about to rise over there, we should go back inside because we can't see the moon here.
Yep.
But 40 years ago today, man walked on that moon.
You don't really believe that, do you?
Well, you think it's a conspiracy theory. I was 4 years old when that happened.
Were you?
And I remember my vividly, this is my first memory of childhood, of my parents being stuck in front of a black and white television set, and I couldn't care less. But that was the day that these famous words were said.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Now, do you remember that?
I don't, must confess.
There's a couple of guys, they went
you
up,
do.
Yeah, I do. A couple of guys, they went up into outer space, and they walked on the moon. And did you know there's only been 12 people since then that have walked on the moon?
Yep.
So
all within a few months of then.
What's going on is the question. Now, the great thing about space, the space race or the space age, apart from all the good gadgets like Velcro and things like that we seem to be using on a regular daily basis, is that we ended up getting some half-decent music out of it, like this. Ground control to Major. Remember this? David Bowie's great song? All about space Ground travel? Control to Major Tom. You're wondering where I'm going with this, aren't you, boys?
There was an album. Like, it had Life on Mars as well and all those weird-ass David Bowie songs. What was the album called?
I don't know.
They were good, though. It was great music.
It was great music.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that flight, there are a few people that you probably know really, really well. Obviously, the man who spoke those amazing words who came out today on the television was talking all about the space race, and he's been relatively quiet of recent times.
He's always been relatively quiet.
Neil has not been a man of many words.
Yep.
But one of his colleagues, Buzz Aldrin, has been the exact opposite.
Yes.
Have we finished with cicadas now?
Yeah, that'd be good. Yeah. Thank you.
We'll come back inside. Now, Buzz Aldrin, he's the exact opposite. He goes out and he speaks to people and does public speaking. He can pull in 50 grand for just going there and talking about landing on the moon and doing all that. Now, that's not bad. But where I was alluding to with music before is this.
Buzz, this is Houston. You've got about 10 minutes left now.
This is the Buzz Aldrin rap, just released just the other day.
All you need is the rocket experience. What you need is the rocket experience. All you need is the rocket experience. To go flying
into outer space. Oh, good.
So we've had the likes of David Bowie, we've had Pink Floyd.
Where did you dredge this up from, Andrew?
It's ridiculous. He released it just the other day. But, you know, we've had Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, all these fantastic music inspired by space travel, and now this. Sorry about my time on the moon now. The sky was black even though the sun shined on. Moonwalking such a trip, it's so fine when you're walking in the lunar dust. So now you've heard it all.
That's the 40th anniversary tribute song, isn't it?
Absolutely. So I was just thinking that all these great things that have come out of space and they play that to you and you go, oh, my God.
Is that all we've got to show? Is that the best of what we've got to show for
12 people have walked on the moon and there's, you know, millions of dollars later. We've got Velcro. We've got all sorts of other great inventions that have been brought on by space travel. And we've got the Buzz Aldrin rap. Technology is a wonderful thing, isn't it?
There's a great urban myth about the pen that writes upside down. Because NASA invested hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, into getting a pen that would write upside down while they're actually in orbit or outside of Earth's gravity. And then,
and then there's the Russian solution.
And the Russian solution is, JD?
Pencil.
Let's use a pencil.
Now, this is absolutely an urban myth. This is completely false, of course, if you go and look it up. You actually don't want to use a pencil in space because... Did anyone know the reason why?
No, I don't.
Graphite filings, I'd imagine.
Graphite filings are conductive. So if you chip off the...
You can arc across some electrical thing.
Well, that's right. If you chip off the tip of your pencil and go floating around, it's conductive and could be a problem.
So you should really get out your Derwents in the blues and the oranges... Rather than using a graphite pencil, no?
Well, it actually turns out that a perfectly ordinary biro works quite well in space.
I love this show. You learn something every day. Now, the other thing I want to talk about space is the fact that imagine if you were at home and you'd accidentally erased the home videos. How popular would you be?
Oh, I've done that. Not very popular at all.
No. Okay.
Two-year-old birthday party.
Wedding videos, JD? Or?
No. Two-year-old birthday party. The first 1 second of it.
Absolutely. Now, just put that into perspective. What would happen if you were the custodian of the video clips of man's first steps on the moon and you lost them?
I reckon the CIA might be doing something fairly serious.
They never existed. So this is part of the
Ron.
It's just, they're saying they've lost the tapes. The tapes never existed. Come on, they're not going to find them. Well, how could you possibly lose something that precious if they did exist in the first place?
Not to mention their 2-inch videotapes. They're not exactly small.
Have you seen 2-inch videotapes? Get your finger out and just hold 2 inches wide. Yeah, now,
and then imagine a whole big spool of 10.5 inches diameter.
They had, according to reports, 200,000 2-inch videotapes.
Well, I thought they were around here somewhere.
How can you lose that? There's a factory somewhere. Maybe there's
Area
a Bermuda 51.
Yeah, there'd be a warehouse, yeah.
Area 51. Just park them under the Ark of the Covenant there.
That's right.
Yeah. They've probably been using a film plot for one of Harrison Ford's film, haven't they? Anyway, Dick Nabsker, if that's how you pronounce his name.
Yep, we used a clip of him in the news.
TV specialist at NASA. Well, he's talking about the lost tapes.
During our search, our friends in Australia saw some photographs at Parks Australia of a recorder of the type that I used to record converted video. But we didn't have converted video parks, so we started talking amongst ourselves about why are these recorders there. What was important is somebody actually modified a 2-inch machine at one location called Parks Australia to record these just to see if they could do it. These two tapes, consisting of an hour each approximately, are missing. We are still open to finding those 2-inch tapes. That is something that came out of the woodwork and is something that we were shocked about, but we don't know where they are.
Well, there you go. There's the explanation. Someone modified the tapes in Australia just to see if they could.
That's Australian ingenuity right there, don't you think? It's because we could, not because we had to. Hey, we've got the technology. Let's have a tinker.
And we got that right, so we'll use the tapes for something else now.
Absolutely. So there'll be some 2-inch. Maybe the D-Gen got it when they were shooting
the dish.
Yeah, maybe they...
What a swizz. They didn't want you to see all the different the shadows in the different directions from the different light sources. Oh, soundstage. That's... Look.
No wonder
they're missing, Graham.
It's absolutely fascinating. If you look at the history of the way it was all done, there was the slow scan video coming up from the moon that had to be converted into normal.
Now, what is slow scan? Can you describe what slow scan is? Obviously, it's the opposite of fast scan, and it's definitely not HD.
Well, when we talk about scan, you talk about if you imagine television being made up of lines of light and dark that are stacked one on top of the other to make up a whole image, and you scan across the line with the light going brighter and dimmer to make up the each line, and then you stack a whole heap of those lines together vertically to make an image out of it. Fast scan that you're normally used to, you can't see that process happening. It happens so quickly that what you appear to see is just an image and that keeps updating itself. Slow scan, you'd use where you've got limited resources, limited bandwidth to send information, to send video, say, over a link that's, you know, primarily aimed at, only has enough bandwidth for an audio signal, perhaps. And this is what they use to send those first pictures back from the moon.
So instead of getting, like we get at the moment, let's take the old standard definition, we get 25 frames of picture in 1 second.
Yep.
You would get maybe one frame every 10 seconds or something. Wouldn't it be that slow?
I think the moon ones were a bit faster than that. I can't
remember. But you
remember
get a really high res one, wouldn't you? And that's what they would have recorded. And that's what they've lost on the tapes.
Yeah. And of course, the way they converted that to normal television was fairly primitive. What they had was a cathode ray screen, like your old-fashioned TV screen.
Yep.
They displayed the slow scan picture on that cathode ray screen, and they had a television camera pointed at it. So they had a camera pointed at a TV screen.
But would they record, say, a minute of video and then transmit that over the next few hours? Or
are you, Key? You don't believe in this.
No. They were transmitting the picture live in real time from...
All right.
From the lunar module, it was being relayed and back to Earth.
So you wouldn't have seen, with slow that high-quality slow scan, you wouldn't have seen motion. You would have just seen frames being drawn over a period
of time. Well, it wasn't that slow that you didn't see motion. It was, you know, a lot faster than, you know, the slow scan that maybe you and I have played with in the past in Radioland. It was maybe 3 or 4 frames a second rather than...
Okay, yep.
So it was fast enough to see some motion.
And the limiting factor there is the bandwidth of the radio signal, how much data you can send in a given period of time.
Yeah, if you need more bandwidth and lot, you know, a high speed and high quality at the same time, you need a much more powerful transmitter. So, and of course, the power was at a premium on the moon, because all they had was what they took with them.
There was some other interesting discussions came up today too, speaking of things like that, because back then in the 60s, risk-taking was an acceptable risk.
Yeah.
Whereas today, risk-taking is not an acceptable risk. It has to be 100% safe or 99.9% safe before people go on. Is that why we don't have much of this moon space travel these days?
I think it's a big part of it. And we've seen that space travel is risky. We've seen lots of space shuttle crews have been lost. We saw during the Lunar Apollo program, we saw that they very nearly lost one crew, and it was only through some extraordinary work that they actually managed to bring them back. That was Apollo 13, mm-hmm. and everybody knows that story. People estimated that the chances of losing the mission and the crew on any of those Apollo missions was something like 1 in 10. Which, yeah, you just wouldn't do these days.
I heard that those early rockets had a 90% chance of making it into space intact.
Yeah, that's 1 in 10. That's
10% error option of, thanks for coming, boys, that's it.
But I think the risk is sort of the political risk as well, because the community were probably not going to wear the expenditure levels all that long.
No.
So if you wanted to stay in government for long, you needed to get your program done, dusted, and move on.
And it's unfortunate because the way that the world has developed in the, in particular, that, you know, in the last 40 years that we've seen, has been largely driven by changes that came about fairly indirectly, but nonetheless, as a result of the space programs in the 60s. Mm. The respect of people who are interested in technology, for a start. Mm. The quality of engineering that goes on. The problem-solving skills that go on.
And linked to that, Graham...
And political issues.
Yeah, and linked to that is the political issues and the fact that we were in the Cold War at the time. I mean, if you look
at... Well, the Cold War was a major, you know, stimulus of technology, really, when you look at it.
Yeah, I mean,
of technology, but it's also the way it developed since. The two great nations in space were the originally, at the start of the space race, were enemies in a Cold War situation, as you say. And now they're cooperative. Everybody who goes into space, anybody who leaves the Earth, there's two languages they have to speak. It's American English and Russian. because the whole thing's a cooperative effort now. But there's also that's a remarkable change.
I mean, if you go further back to, from the space race, if you go further back to the Second World War and so forth, and you talk about cryptography and some of the behind-the-scenes advances in computing that probably and left all of, us where we are,
yep.
was largely because of conflict, and therefore there was an imperative to get the job done, so you didn't care how much you spent and how long it took.
Mm.
Whereas at the moment, fortunately, we're reasonably safe from global war, it would appear. And there's no imperative to spend up big on this because there's no fear, I guess.
Mm.
Well, NASA just commercial competition.
NASA was devised as a military research organisation, wasn't it, for rockets and missiles and...
Is that its origins, is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, yeah, the whole space program came out of captured German technology that went to America for rocketry technology. Absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think one of the thing which I find amazing is you look at the computing power that we have in our mobile phones or in our cars these days.
Oh, and in excess of anything that was used on Apollo anywhere.
Absolutely. And you sort of think, well, my God, my Nokia needs to reboot every so often. What did these guys go through? You know, their lives were held in the balance by an old processor that...
And, of course, they did have problems. The navigation computers on the lunar module on Apollo 11 did keep failing, and they did have to keep rebooting them and restarting them.
Yeah.
If you're interested in this history, look up Lunar Surface Journal, and Google it. You'll find it. It's got all the transcripts, all the radio transmissions, audio files, video files, everything you want, and annotated so you can understand
except
what they're
the ones
talking
that
about.
They've lost.
Except I haven't got the videos that they've lost, but never mind. Yeah. But lots Dr. Ron's of got huge them. Amounts of resources there for anyone who's interested in this stuff. I have spent literally hours going through that stuff. It's amazing.
Excellent. Well, there's a good tip. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Sorry,
good luck, Mr. Gorski.
Oh, yeah, good.
Yeah. That's another urban myth. Go look that one up on Snopes. There's snopes.com just for myths
we've
as
been
well.
Talking about slow scan television. We're going to talk about the exact opposite, Adam, when we return. We'll be talking about fast scan television of the high definition variety and what Channel 9 are up to.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Talk Radio.
Police called to control crowds at a technology fair in Singapore.
The sale of Apple TVs has gone up a third in the past year.
How frustrating.
Very. Twitter came to life like you wouldn't believe.
What next, I say?
Around about $10 billion from the NBN.
Well, that's a bit unusual, isn't it? I'm not sure what to make of that.
Those people who found themselves hacked turned into porn stars very quickly.
Entertaining.
Oh, look, Dr. Ron, I haven't seen you like that before.
Informative.
Like my old phone is at like 32 by 32 pixels.
Independent.
Well, I smoke. I smoke, that's right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Don't breathe this.
You're listening.
All right, we've all been outside. We've had our drinks. The discussion about the space race continued here in the studio verbatim there for a while. Mm. And anyway, then it moved on to showing handheld phone devices and new gadgets that people have bought. That's what happens here in the break during the studio. It was very entertaining.
Yeah, we're just as geeky off air as we are on.
Sad, isn't it?
Possibly more so.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb, and Dr. Ron, JD, and Dr. Graham are in this evening. We're all talking about technology. If you've just joined us, where have you been, Thaddeus? Just come back up on the chat there. He said, I'm late, I'm sorry. Didn't bring a note from Mum. If you want to come and join us and be late as well, chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we're at tonight. Come and participate. No login required. Just be nice. Come and say good day. Be good to hear from you, especially if you're new to this radio show. Because don't forget, you can hear us live around the world, in New Zealand. In particular, in the North Island, we're out there through magic.
Live on the radio in New Zealand. That's fantastic, isn't it?
That's modern technology for you. They couldn't do that in the days of the space race, or probably shouldn't start that argument, should we? Anyway.
And live on the internet everywhere else.
Absolutely. Lots of listeners. How many viewers have we got on Ustream this evening,
we
Jody?
We had a maximum of 14 a little while ago. Let's have another look.
Oh,
we've been up to 18 today.
Down on average as well. We had about 50 or 60 the other day. That
currently
was amazing.
Five.
So. Oh, good.
Well, I've stuck with it.
Oh, that wasn't that bad, was it? Anyway. Anyway, Adam Turner is our regular contributor of this program. He was in the studio last week when Lydia Davis was in as well. So
everybody came in when I wasn't here.
No, you had to go and follow the Hawks down south to Tasmania. Which
go Hawks.
Absolutely.
Go Hawks,
I've lost
tell
interest.
You what.
Anyway. Anyway, Adam Turner's our regular, and this week is no exception. He has lodged his view from the couch, and we're talking about what Channel 9 are up to, because Channel 9 have been a bit of a slow taker with digital TV.
Okay.
With Foxtel, you know how they've got a partnership with Foxtel and all that sort of stuff. Well, they've been a bit, they've been dragging their traces a bit and all that sort of stuff. So let's go to it and hear what the View from the Couch is about and Channel 9 and digital TV.
Channel 9 is finally go for a second digital channel. More choice is gradually coming to the idiot box in Australia with SBS2 and now 9's youth-focused Go with an exclamation mark on the end. The 9 Network's new standard definition channel, 99, will mostly offer reruns of popular shows such as The Hills, Terminator, Weeds, Survivor, The Bachelor, Hell's Kitchen. Apparently these are popular. I wouldn't watch most of them. But there's also some good stuff in there like CSI and some comedies like Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm. It's a fairly eclectic mix. There's something in there for everyone. Now, the new channel is set for a soft launch on August 9th before a full launch in September. Now, later this year, Go will broadcast The Vampire Diaries, which is a big show in the US, although there's no mention of the word exclusively here, so I suspect it'll be something like an encore screening on Go the day after it screens on Channel 9. Although, the more I think about it, the more I actually like the concept of Go, even though I wouldn't watch half the shows. Go, don't forget that exclamation mark, is probably the closest free-to-air equivalent to Foxtel's TV One, which is the ultimate veg-out channel. You know, you can flick it on at any time, day or night, and stumble across something half-decent that's not too intellectually challenging. The great thing about repeats of shows like Seinfeld is that it doesn't matter if you dip in halfway through an episode. You can just flick it on, sit down, and tune out for a while. The real gem of digital television at the moment is SBS2, which, until June, was the SBS World News Channel screening repeats of its foreign language news programs. Right now, SBS2 is letting SBS screen The Ashes and the Tour de France at the same time. Now, the Tour is on the digital-only SBS2, but if the government was really feeling brave, it should have encouraged SBS to put the Tour on SBS1 and The Ashes on the digital-only SBS2. Now, that would help boost the take-up of digital television. Next year, SBS2 will offer around-the-clock coverage of the World Cup in South Africa, which will sell a hell of a lot of digital television gear in a multicultural country like Australia. It all makes 10's 1HD look pretty pathetic in comparison. Regular listeners will know that I think simulcasting 1 in high and standard def is a stupid idea, and that 10HD should offer the best of 1 and 10 in high definition. All that aside, the rise of 1 and SBS2 is great news for those worried about pay TV poaching live sporting events from free-to-air. For the first time, the British Open is only on Foxtel this year, perhaps an ominous sign of things to come when the anti-siphoning list is reviewed next year. It would be great if 9 could also use Go to keep more sport on free-to-air, but it's unlikely considering that 9's in bed with Foxtel and they've negotiated joint coverage rights for the next Summer and Winter Olympics. In the words of Roy and HG, it's one of those weeks where too much sport is barely enough. Even the most cynical viewer has to admit that digital television is finally finding its feet in Australia.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
It's interesting, some of the cynicism of Adam's voice. He takes you on an emotional roller coaster, right? Have you noticed through those things from cynical through to, oh, I actually think he likes this, through to, he does like it at the very end.
It wasn't go, it was go.
Sorry, I'll just. Yes. Anyway, so there you go, something to look forward to. We've got ABC3 coming up and we've got, hang on, is this how it goes? Go!
Go!
Shortly.
Got to get that exclamation mark in.
I must admit, we were talking about things. Did he say what channel it was? It wasn't 99, it's another channel, isn't it? Is that right?
I don't know if he said the channel number, did he?
Well, no, I don't think he did. That's why I was just querying. I thought maybe I missed it, but maybe
just hit your tune button, eventually it'll be
keep
there.
Going, channel up, you'll flick over it.
Yep. I had to do that recently with SBS. They put a new transmitter up and moved frequencies a little bit or something, and half of the... I think channel 31 or something disappeared and you had to retune your TV set. I wonder if that's going
to
be...
And when channel 10 brought 1 on, you had to do the same thing.
Did you? Did they? Do you watch much of 1?
No.
No. Yeah, free TV. It's good, huh?
I do watch a lot of ABC too, though, I've got to say, catching up on the previous night when it's a bit of a blockbuster night.
Oh, when you forget, like when you're watching Spicks and Specks and The Chaser on a Wednesday night and you get caught up doing something, you're like, oh, damn, oh, hang on, I'll watch it tomorrow night.
That's right.
Half an hour earlier, so I've got to get the kids into bed just that and practicing earlier.
I'm with you.
Gone. Yeah, anyway, good. There's other interesting news this week. Whilst we were talking about NASA, they got hacked during the week. Did you hear about this?
Who got hacked?
NASA.
Not NASA. Department of, the Air Force, wasn't it? Well, did NASA get hacked as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
No, really?
NASA. NASA got hacked because this guy was searching for UFOs and aliens.
Oh, yeah. That's quite funny.
Absolutely.
I'm on the same page.
A man who hacked into NASA computers has launched a last-ditch effort in Britain's High Court to avoid extradition to face charges in the US. Gary McKinnon, who suffers from Asperger's syndrome, has admitted to hacking into 97 US computers from his London home in 2001 and 2002. Following the September 11 attacks, the 43-year-old claims he was looking for evidence of UFOs and aliens on the high-security computer systems belonging to the US Army, Navy, Air Force, and Department of Defense.
And the fact that they want to lock him up is proof that there must be evidence there for him to find.
Correct.
So you think Mulder and Scully have been telling the truth all along?
Of course.
Oh, good. Dr. Ron, you'll have an opinion on that, I'm sure.
Pretty close to finding the Apollo 11 soundstage, I think. The lost tapes are actually all there. Yeah. I couldn't tolerate that, so we'll lock him away. By jingoes, by crikey.
The Apollo 11 soundstage, is that down in Docklands?
Yeah, no, it's in Florida or whatever, where they put all the astronauts into the,
Now, the Docklands is the new one they're going to use for Mars.
Tolls Fires comes up, he says he wants to believe on the chat.
I want to believe.
I want to believe too.
I always wanted one of those posters.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Uncle Sam names you is I Want to Believe.
An I Want to Believe poster.
Yeah, that one,
The back of Fox Mulder's
Someone will have one out there, they can send it to you or something like that. Put it on the back of the toilet door or something. I Want to Believe. Anyway,
there was another hacking incident during the week, which was the Royal Australian Air Force.
Yeah, but that's boring. That's mainstream news.
Oh, true. That's mainstream
news. But why? Did you have another opinion? An Indian, I don't know whether he was Indian, but he was hacked. Someone hacked it over the state of the Indian vilification that's going on currently around Australia, allegedly.
Allegedly. And this is what happened. And the Air Force said that no sensitive information was tampered with or accessed. It was just the public website that was
defaced.
Got the wrong site.
But does that sort of give you an indication if someone can hack into an external website that belongs to the Defence Force, what's the chances of getting internally?
Yeah, but were they hosting it on Air Force systems or was the public website just hosted on a normal commercial hosting provider?
Have a look. Probably.
What's the?
It's probably log.
On, let me do some.
The login would be something like Australian Air Force password Air Force One.
It'll be Air Force. use it.
Wrong Air Force. Yes.
No. It's deliberate. You know, someone will just hack in with something like that. You know? I know that's the wrong Air Force.
Graham's trying out. It's username, root, password, Air Force. He's in. He's done it.
Well done, that man.
RAF.gov.au. He really is. This is bad. Oh, dear. Graham's going to be arrested shortly, but that's all right. We'll catch it all on the Ustream.
We'll someone at the door.
Just opening putty. My SSH client will be.
Now, the government, just changing the track a little bit here. If you get caught doing naughty things on the internet,
Graham,
these days, if piracy, this is piracy, not hacking.
That's all right then.
The federal government is considering introducing new ways to crack down on these pirates, including possibly an introduction of a three strikes policy that would see individuals have their internet connections severed after three warnings for illegal downloads. This is along the lines of the AFL with drug cheats, isn't it? They have the three strike warning. You've been caught twice. Sorry, third time you're out.
Who's going to issue you a strike?
Well, I don't know. Maybe the ACMA people will come around and knock on your door. The government has admitted that there is a disadvantage to the policy, which would give ISPs the added responsibility of tracking, identifying, and then disconnecting users who repeatedly download files via illegal methods. So you go. Looks like it might be the ISPs that do it. But why would they do that? Why would they cut off someone who is knowingly a big bandwidth usage customer too? Like, it's in their interest to have this sort of stuff going. Why would they cut somebody else off?
Well, the ISPs wouldn't want to do it. It's who's proposing this? Won't be the ISPs. It'll be the
government.
Yeah.
It's another Conroy.
Mr. Conroy.
Another Conroy office brain. I reckon they go to the pub.
Think tank.
They go to
exercise.
They just pop down to one of the many pubs that surrounds Parliament House here in Canberra and say, what can we do this week?
Oh, we can cut off people's
internet.
How are
we going to do that? Oh, I'll get the ISPs to do it. Yeah, good. Anyway, have we heard anything of the blacklist of recent times? The ACMA blacklist? That's sort of disappeared off into a void somewhere.
It's gone very quiet, hasn't it?
It has. They're up to $44 million or something like that. That's about $100,000 per website,
$100,000 per URL that's on that list. Not bad, eh? So three strikes, you're out. Watch it if you're downloading naughty things, things that you shouldn't be doing. It reminds me of an odd spot. Stay tuned for the odd spot this evening if you're interested in things that went awfully wrong downloading.
Wasn't necessarily naughty, but...
I think, wasn't it?
Wasn't it?
I don't know. Anyway, well, you have to find out, won't you?
Stay tuned.
If you're not listening live, just skip forward about 40 minutes. Don't worry about
don't do that.
No, the best bits to come, isn't it? Other interesting news for iPhones and Hutchison's. Last week, they came out with their pricing. They've changed the ballpark a little bit this week. They've actually reduced some of their prices even more. So I don't know whether this is in a, we made a boo-boo, or whether
I think everyone came out saying they were pretty average prices when they were first.
Oh, you think they're a victim of public opinion here, JD, do you?
Well, I think there's probably a reason why they kept on saying the prices aren't going to be known until release, and then they'd drop them a couple of days in advance, and then suddenly on release day they were cheaper again.
Yeah, you reckon? Okay, bit of spin here. But anyway, 3 Mobile has adjusted its plans. And the company announced that customers choosing an 8-gig iPhone 3G model on its $49 per month plan will not have to pay the monthly handset payments. And they were about $14 they were adding to that. So you got a discount of $14 a month, $140, $160, $158, if my maths is good, which probably it isn't. But that's not a bad discount over the course of 12 months, or is it 2-year contract?
2 years.
So, in strengthening 3's price on last year's iPhone model, which it had originally offered for $0 on a $79 plan, the $49 cap includes $350 worth of calls and texts, 300 minutes of 3 to mobiles, and 250 meg of data. So everything's come down. Maybe they're going to give them away, which will be, they are, $0. Nothing's for free, though, guys. So, but I must admit, I still like the idea of buying one off the Apple site and then picking and choosing your carrier as required. How easy is it to do that? APN thing, which is where you plug a SIM in and connect
very,
up to
very easy through iTunes.
How do you do it? Like, do you just connect to a Telstra clicky thing or something like that, or an Optus, or a...
To be honest, mine's locked, so when I updated mine, it automatically offered me the latest Optus configuration file, but I assume...
Well, did you just turn the phone on and it said, well,
plug it in,
you're with Optus?
Plug it in, did the update, so part of the update process, it said, do you want to download the latest Optus update? So I did. I've subsequently put another one on there, but that's another story. and I presume if you've got an unlocked phone, it gives you a choice. And you can easily download these things. If you Google, you can find the carrier's mobile configuration files online.
All right. There you go. I must admit, I don't have an iPhone yet. I'm waiting for version 4. I've come to the conclusion, I think. 4G.
But you are going to get one.
Eventually.
Yeah.
I think they're a great phone. Don't get me wrong. I think they're terrific. What JD's done with the Tech Talk livery on his device is really good. Oh, absolutely. If for nothing else, and you can have all those sort of fun and game things. It's a nice device, you know. It just works, doesn't it? Well, to a certain degree.
Pretty much.
Certain things that just give you grief with, but that's anything technological, isn't it?
There's always a quirk.
You choose the right tool for the right job, and you're away. So it's just a matter of working out what exactly it is that you want to do. And I think the iPhone is just that. It's more of a fashion statement than it is a business tool. Would you agree?
No.
Okay.
Not in my case.
Well, no, not in your case. But then again, you don't have data with your work plan, do you? So
no.
Speaks volumes of your organisation, really does.
So would you be getting it as a fashion statement or a business tool?
Probably as a curiosity, a curiosity type sort of device, I think, more so than anything else. You know, when I get dressed up to go to the pub on a Friday night, I'd put away the business tool, the Nokia, and I'd put in the SIM into the iPhone.
Really?
Isn't that what you do with it?
And have a play. Well, I've done that recently. Yes.
Well, there you go. See, I'm not Robinson Crusoe here. All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. When we come back, we're going to talk about cupcakes.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
We've now got the technology. It's time to get silly with it.
Are people still using Internet Explorer?
That would be a shame.
Do you reckon it'll take up? I reckon the youth of today will love it.
Like a Dr. Evil's boardroom.
Yeah, it does change the way the browser behaves.
Oh, I'm excited.
Don't worry about Kaspersky. Get into your local road sign.
Yeah.
I like a fresh install, me personally, but nonetheless.
Entertaining.
I was in until you said maggots.
Informative.
How do you decide who to follow?
Independent.
Oh, aren't they the biggest crock?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
No, 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 no.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one weirdest technology radio show.
I love those promos, Dr. On. Get into your local street zone. Remember that?
Yeah, you did a story on hacking into streets and the...
You know, the big orange things that tell you to turn left, road close, or someone's got a sale on as you drive around the local cities of this country. there was a spate of hackings a while back.
Zombies ahead.
That's right. That was the graphic, yeah. So you can imagine driving along, you know, instead of getting the roadwork sign on the freeway, you
get a big orange warning sign saying, zombies ahead, yeah. Warning.
Oh, dear. If nothing else, it's a bit of self-indulgent flashbacking there, really, isn't it, if there is such a word. Now, let's turn the attention here to Dr. Ron a little bit. There's a couple of things on the rundown here, which is very pertinent to your good self there. The first thing, let's talk about Cupcake. Now, you love your HTC Dream, don't you?
I do. It's great.
Now, you've been very unimpressed by a lot of features that draw considerable amounts of power that you just don't have. Now, even last week, you were talking about the fact that you found a workaround for the... was it the it's like the
tethering?
No. It was where he gets his toys from.
The Android Market.
That's the one I was looking for, because I don't have one, you see.
The Android Market is not carrying tethering applications because of pressure that Google is under from mobile phone carriers like T1 in the US.
Now, tethering, for those of you who go, what the hell are they talking about, is using your mobile as a modem via a cable, via Bluetooth or whatever it is like, and connecting into the mobile phone network to use your mobile broadband.
Like that's tethering. I was doing in Tasmania last week to listen to the show.
Yeah. Why wouldn't the mobile phone companies want you to do this? The answer is because they want you to buy their little USB devices and PCM CIA card and express card devices.
Well, is that why?
That's why. But, and they want you to get on...
But they're cheap as chips anyway. Who cares?
They want you to sell you more plans. They want you to get you on another mobile phone plan.
But the interesting
thing
is, my really old Nokia did it out of the box. They didn't have to download an application.
So does my phone. All my phones have done it out of the box.
So, you know, why are they making it difficult for these smartphones? It's actually a bit beyond me.
It's cash cow, isn't it? Mm. You buy all this money for a thing and they can get you... Like Optus, when they were going to ping you an extra $10 a month to use the iPhone tethering. $10 a month, like that's $120 a year.
Just to do it.
Just for the privilege. No extra bandwidth or anything like that. I just thought that was a bit rough, don't you?
I found someone that had written an application that you could install on your HTC device to let you do tethering. And that application was hosted on his website. So you just navigate there in your HTC Dreams or your Google Phone's browser, and you can click on the link and install it directly. You don't have to go through the Android Market to do it.
Excellent. Well, the Cupcake is the next incarnation of the Google
operating
Android
system operating software. System. Yeah.
Yes. Now, there's a lot of rumors around about what it can and can't do. Have you heard anything that's good? Apparently, the battery life it's a bit more leaner on the batteries, according to I think Adam when he did his view from the couch up in Sydney recently.
It is. They've listened to everybody's complaints and criticism, and they've made some big improvements there. The other thing which I saw during the week of interest is that three customers who have got the HTC Magic, which is the next version of the Google phone, they will get the Cupcake upgrade for free, automatically pushed down to their handsets, I think. Let me just quickly double-check that. I think that's what I read.
Interesting, because I had a HTC device running the Mobile Windows platform.
Oh, bad luck.
And you could never get it upgraded.
No.
Even though it was capable of doing it, and there's lots of hacker sites that showed you how, and I did at one point, but you could never get an official upgrade to any of those early HTC devices.
Well, I was reading on Gizmodo during the course of the week, one of their contributors by the name of Daniel, he loves his HTC Dream, but was unimpressed by the company's reticence to actually upgrade the Android software from version 1.5. So he asked Optus about it directly on Twitter, as you do. It's where we do our social networking these days. Anyway, he actually got a response from Optus, and they said, according to the Twitter post, that they'll be rolling out Cupcake in late July. So if you're hungry for an upgrade, chances are you might get one with hundreds and thousands on it. So to be more specific, they actually said the HTC Dream owners on the Optus network will start receiving the upgrade to Android 1.5 from late July. So there you go. If you've got a Dream on Optus, chances are you might get a flash upgrade or something like that.
There you go.
That'd be funny. You'd be sitting there and you'd go, please restart your mobile phone. Assuming that's what it would do. It'd be like download the OS in the background and go for a restart and tell you to re-kick things in, and then nothing will ever be the same again.
It'll be something like that.
Data and, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, in other Dr. Ron episodes, you had a recently interesting challenge with one of your EEE PC laptops, notebooks, didn't you?
I did. This was a challenge.
You did a flash BIOS upgrade. Firstly, why?
Why
did you want to upgrade the BIOS in a brand new device?
It's not necessarily...
What couldn't you do that you wanted to do?
Turn it on.
Well, it's fairly fundamental.
Yeah. Now, this wasn't an EEE PC. This was the Aspire 1, the Acer Aspire 1 netbook.
Okay. And what it failed to turn on because...
It failed to turn on. What would happen is that...
You did your 23 goes and that was it. You had to buy the license,
this,
did you?
This wasn't something that happened because you were fiddling. This was something that just happened.
This is something that just happened, Graham.
Okay.
We went to turn it on one day and the green power light came on and that's all. And we heard the disc going clunk, clunk, clunk and some whirring noises inside.
Oh. I'm not ka-ching, ka-ching, clunk, clunk.
No, that was sort of... They sounded like... They sounded like normal hard disk starting type sounds, but there was no display, there was nothing. My wife went into a panic and said, oh, it's terrible, it's a hard disk crash. I said, well, it could be a number of things. It is bad, but there could be a number of things
that
faulty.
Quick, go and shoot the neighbour.
Yeah, well, look, Acer, to their credit, actually stepped us through when we logged a help desk complaint.
So you rang them up, did you, and said, my green light comes on, but that's it.
We logged a complaint or a help desk query on their website because we had... the device under warranty, and they said, try this, and they said, try doing a BIOS flash. It might have lost the BIOS. Now, the BIOS stands for Basic Input Output System. And that's
the operating system you have before you have an operating system, isn't it?
That's right. That contains information that's stored in the computer just to start the computer up, to make it look for a hard disk, to find an operating system, and to kick things off.
Yep.
Now, what we had to do was download a small file from the Acer website. We put it on a USB stick. We put it in the side of the netbook. We powered it up and we held down a couple of keys. We followed the instructions very carefully, like function and escape or something. And that actually forced the machine to boot off the USB stick.
Okay.
And it actually started and it automatically reflashed the BIOS. It reloaded the BIOS into the computer.
So by this stage, you were looking like a bit of a hero in your wife's eyes. Is this right?
It was a good day. It was a good day. We didn't lose any data.
You were allowed out for the rest of the day, were you? Hi, Lainey, if you're listening.
There was no data lost, so it wasn't a hard disk issue. So there was nothing, no problem with any of the data that was on the hard disk in the device. But, yeah, sometimes these things happen. Sometimes BIOSes just go west.
Yep.
It's not uncommon.
It's good that they were able to help you to fix it, and the fix was relatively straightforward.
It was very good. So, yeah, well done,
Mason. In the old days, of course, you would have done that sort of stuff with a boot floppy or something, but... Yeah, to have a way to do it with the BIOS not even starting, not even looking for boot devices, that's quite impressive.
It was very good. But we got
big question though. You logged the call on the website.
Yes.
How long did they take to get back to you? And how did they get back to you?
They're pretty fast. They got back to us, I think it was via email.
And gee, that's all right.
Yeah, it was within a few hours.
A few hours. So what, the next morning or
yeah, something like that. I was pretty impressed with the response.
Okay. That's not too bad.
I was half expecting to have to package it all up again. Take it back to the store we bought it from, say, look, this is under warranty, it's not working, can we get a replacement one? No, we'll fix this one, it'll be 3 to 5 weeks.
Yeah, and of course then you worry about your data the whole time it's away, and if they give you a replacement one, you've lost all your data. Before you send it away, you think about pulling the hard disk out to copy it and worrying about whether that's going to make the warranty situation worse.
All that nonsense, Graham. So the moral
so
of the
you
story
saved
is,
all of that.
Saved all of that, and the moral of the story is backup.
Do your backups, for goodness sake, yes.
Except if you're doing your iPhone.
Yeah.
Then back up your backup.
But you need to ask Adam about that.
Absolutely. You can destroy pictures. And NASA probably do the same thing too with their videotape stuff as well.
Back up your 2-inch tape.
Absolutely. You fit onto DigiBeta these days, easy. Okay, very good. We all lived happily ever after. The Aspire notebook has new... Netbook, should I say, has new BIOS,
and it's
and it boots faster.
And it's no noticeable performance improvements other than the fact that now it boots, which it wasn't doing before. But no, it's going fine.
Okay, very good.
And now you know how to hack into it as well.
Yeah, press the Apple Shift.
Yeah, I always get a bit scared when I start doing things like that. It worries me, but you have to do that sometimes.
I've always been of the opinion if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Just use it.
Yeah.
Unless something terrible goes wrong and you load software up and it doesn't talk to other things and then you have to start pulling things apart and your computer. That's where I like those rollbacks in Windows where you can go back to the last previously known good device. Providing you haven't deleted anything, it actually works quite well.
Yeah, except the last known good boot configuration never is. It's always the first one that crashed rather than the last one that worked.
I'll go back to then.
Yeah. But,
all right. Let's talk about, because we're talking about web browsers, Firefox 3.5. Who's using it here? I haven't summoned up the courage to load it up yet, because I think, JD, you were saying that there was issues.
I'm using it routinely at home.
Yeah?
And it's working reasonably well.
Have you noticed any differences, any speed changes or anything like that? Or is it just same old? Because everyone used to expect big things out of Firefox, didn't they?
It's allegedly two times faster. And look, it probably is... But in practice, you just don't notice it, I don't think.
Yeah.
Certainly, it's got some compatibility issues, as I mentioned, I think, last week with Google Latitude at the very least.
Oh, I like it to have my latitude. Latitude's everything to me. Yeah. I like knowing Dr. Ron is at any particular hour of the day, or my wife for that matter, but or the both of them together.
Hang on a minute. What does that mean?
I don't know. You're going through the people on my latitude.
There are a couple of nice little features, and they're only really just window candy, but there's an easy way of adding an extra tab rather than having to use command keys or menus. There's just a little plus next to the tab so you can keep on adding extra tabs and so forth.
Yeah.
So there's a couple of niceties in there, but...
All right, it's Walt Mossberg, who writes for the New York Times. He's a tech reporter over there. He came up with a fairly interesting thing, which I'll play to you right now, about what he thought about Firefox 3.5.
Hi, this is Walt Mossberg from the Wall Street Journal. And this week, I want to talk to you about the third major new edition of an important web browser to come out in just the last few months. This time, it's Firefox with a new version, version 3.5. And I've been testing it. Firefox is the second most popular web browser, but there's a big gap between Firefox and the leader, which is Microsoft's Internet Explorer. Internet Explorer has somewhere north of 60% share, Firefox roughly 23% or so. But Firefox is number one in the hearts of lots of the most knowledgeable computer users, and it has often led the way in features and especially in speed in the past. So I tested Firefox 3.5 with a view to both those things. Its edge over its competitors, particularly Apple's Safari browser and Google's Chrome browser, its edge is eroding, both in terms of speed and in terms of features. This is the first new version of Firefox that I have tested, which didn't clean up in my speed tests. In fact, actually was a tiny bit slower in most of the tests than either Safari in most cases, or in a couple of cases than Chrome. It did handily beat Microsoft's Internet Explorer 8, which I have previously established in other reviews. Is the slowest of the current generation of browsers. But people are used to new versions of Firefox kind of cleaning the floor with the others in terms of speed, and that's not true in this case. In features, there only really are a handful of new features, and some of them are catch-ups to other browsers. A good example is private browsing, which is a mode where you can go out on the internet, go to various websites, and then have the browser not keep any traces of where you've been. There are a couple of other interesting new features. This new version of Firefox has geolocation, which means that it can pinpoint with your location on compatible websites that make use of that feature. And it has improved a number of its standard features, like the ability to recover where you were in your last session when you either close it or it shuts down in a crash. But by and large, I thought both in speed and features, this was not a big leap, particularly compared to the Safari and Chrome browsers. So what's there? What is Mozilla, which is the nonprofit that owns Firefox, saying is such a big deal here? Well, they are talking about a lot of under-the-hood things that may not emerge for some time as important to average consumers. For instance, they're talking about the fact that Firefox 3.5 has the ability to play video directly from websites without the aid of a plugin like Adobe Flash or Apple's QuickTime or Microsoft's Silverlight. This matters a lot to some people, but I don't think to average consumers very much. Mozilla is now positioning Firefox not as the fastest browser, which used to be its claim, but as the browser that can be a platform for what are called web applications. These are programs like photo editors and word processors and spreadsheets that already exist out on the web. You don't store them on your computer. You use them directly from the internet, from what's called the cloud, which is the industry term for the servers that run the internet. Now, Google is also doing the same thing, and in fact, Google has announced an operating system, also called Chrome, that will be based around these web-based applications. So my conclusion is that Firefox 3.5 is a very good browser. but it has lost some of its edge in terms of speed and features, and competitors are right there with it, especially Safari and Chrome.
Yeah, some interesting observations there. I do like the ability, potentially, of being able to play video and other multimedia type sort of material directly into the browser without having to download a plugin, because traditionally that's what you've been used to doing in recent times, especially for Flash video. You had to go and download the Flash plugin and all those sorts of things. But, you know, I think that's potentially good. Anyone else see anything interesting there that sort of stands out?
I've gone off Firefox, I've got to say.
Yeah.
Just recently. I got...
What are you using,
Ben? I'm using Chrome at the moment.
Oh, well done.
I haven't used... I looked at it to start with, and then I thought, oh, yeah, that's interesting. It's pretty bare bones and fairly Spartan, but I understand...
Yeah, that's what's good about it.
Correct. Yeah, and I understand where Google's coming from releasing it like that, and they're releasing what is essentially a component that can be used in other things at later times, like the operating system, like the Google Chrome operating system. But I got fed up with Firefox with its poor... or it's what I can consider its excessive memory usage and CPU usage. Mm. I'd have three or four or five tabs open. I'd have a tab open with Facebook, one with Twitter, and one on eBay and a couple of others. And my machine's running like a dog. I've got Task Manager open and it's just 100% all the time. I think, what is using all my system resources on the PC?
I've seen your machines. Don't go too far down that path. Oh,
but I should be able to have Microsoft Outlook open and... Firefox open and no other applications and have a usable computer, and
absolutely,
I didn't.
Yeah.
And was just using an...
And you go and kill all the Firefox processors and your memory all comes back.
Correct.
Remarkable.
It's bizarre. You close Firefox and then you watch in Task Manager and after a few seconds it shuts all the...
Isn't
that
what Microsoft used to do with their stuff? They were very heavy with their browser and code and resources and stuff like that.
But until I actually had this problem and I started looking at Task Manager thinking, why is my machine running so slowly? It's just bad memory management, bad resource management on the part of Mozilla Firefox. So I've started using Chrome. I haven't changed my browsing behavior. I'm opening the same number of tabs, looking at the same websites, doing the same things, and my machine's running much, much faster.
The problem I have is that I'm very dependent on some of the features and plugins that Firefox now offers, especially from a SEO point of view and ad blocking point of view and things like that. Those plugins are terrific, and I don't believe, and I will stand corrected if someone can tell me, that those sort of facilities belong in any of the other browsers.
Well, I've been in the same position as you. There are plugins which I do enjoy using in Firefox, like Fire FTP is a popular one. There's also a proxy server one called Foxy Proxy.
Foxy Proxy.
There's a couple like that which I like. That's the name of it.
Foxy Proxy.
There's a couple of plugins like that which I do enjoy using, and so I find that I'm going back to Firefox occasionally to use those applications, those plugins, but I'm using Chrome more and more and more for my web browsing.
I was never a fan of plugins, and I didn't have a lot of plugins. I think I've got one plugin that I use all the time, which in Firefox, which displayed my current bandwidth usage, so that I knew how much I'd used on my plan, and wasn't really dependent on much else. And I've pretty much converted everything over to Chrome. It's just such a clean, it just works type environment.
Thing I like about Chrome, well, that's a good thing about simplistic things, isn't it? There's not much to get in its way and trip it up.
That's right.
The thing I like about Chrome is it's basically got the render engine out of Safari in it. And I love Safaris. I've never seen websites render better than I have seen with Safari's render
engine.
That's
one thing I noticed with the new Firefox is that they've done something different and the pages look really nice.
Maybe they've altered something.
They have to sweeten it in that same way, but... I still use Chrome. The things I like in Chrome are things like being able to drag tabs around and pull a tab out and make it a clean window, and take a clean window tab and put it back into among other tabs, and just being able to manage my workspace like that to put things where I want them so that they make sense to me.
Excellent. It's a bit like the Mac PC Linux argument, isn't it? You choose the tool that's right for you. In this case, you choose the browser that works for you as
exactly
well.
Exactly right, yeah.
What are you using, JD, on your MacBook here in the studio at the moment?
At the moment, I'm using Safari.
Depends what operating system he's using, isn't it? Well, what operating system are you using first? You on the Mac OS?
Yeah, Leopard, I think.
Leopard today.
Go and check.
But you do use Firefox, though.
I do on my my Power Mac at home.
All right.
Which is my main computer. This is my laptop, my portable. So I'm using Safari here because I found it very stable for the Ustream client that we're running. Whereas, as people have probably mentioned, Firefox does have a tendency to fall over when it runs out of memory. So
your mind's been falling over quite a bit lately, probably for that very reason. Says, do you want to tell Mozilla? And I've given up now.
Well, having said those things, my observations about Firefox, I haven't yet started using the latest version, so I'll have to give that a try, see if some of those memory leaks, or not memory leaks, just memory management issues are fixed.
Very good. Everyone's got an opinion? Tell us. Come on to the chat or send us an email, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. Let us know why, how, and what you're using, because it'd be interesting to know. Cloud computing, which also Walt was alluding to there, Microsoft's revealed what it will be charging for the Windows Azure cloud computing service set to launch by the end of the year. The company will be charging US currency, 12 cents per hour for computing, 15 cents per gigabyte for storage, and 10 cents per 10,000 storage transactions. That's a 100% increase on what Google charge. So, I don't know. You've got to look at the pros and cons of each of the particular cloud's environments and take it from there. Clouds are – one of the great advantages I see of that is it's like a backup. Means that, you know, if you, it's not stored locally, so if something gets nicked, dropped, broken or stolen, it's still there, which is very handy.
Adam Turner in our chat room was critical of Google Docs last week. I was using Google Docs today and I didn't think it was too bad, Adam. Thought the interface was pretty good.
Didn't Adam have a meltdown on a Mac just recently? I thought I saw something go past on a tweet, something about something had fallen over.
In fact,
he's
written an article about it, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, really?
Where he actually relied on his cloud computing to get back up and running whilst he was getting his Mac fixed.
So he's now a convert to cloud computing, is he?
Maybe. I think he was using it anyway, which is why the data was
absolutely
there.
So. We use a bit of cloud computing for doing rundowns and stuff like that and collaboratively share documents, and that works really well. The other interesting news this week, Microsoft's threatening to open up shops next door to Apple. I thought this was humorous.
Yes.
So wherever you go and pop in to pick up a Mac, you can pop next door and grab the same thing on a PC for a quarter of the price. Microsoft's chief operating officer says that the software maker is planning to open retail stores right next door to Apple later this year. So there you go. It'll be interesting. So get very
me
much
too.
Diversity. Yeah, absolutely. It'd be like what they did on the Chaser the other night. You can have the Mac guy on the left and the PC guy on the right and literally walk through those doors if you wanted to.
And for the geeks amongst us, there was a photo, there was a tweet pic about a Lego store opened opposite an Apple store. And if you had Microsoft next door, isn't that the perfect trilogy?
Absolutely. some other interesting news. Microsoft Office users are being attacked by criminals at the moment. So if you're running Microsoft Office, just be wary of some of the exploits in that. Get your patches up today because you never know. Just one of those emails that sneaks through and you're gone.
Do your Office updates.
Absolutely. And finally, this evening, before we go to the website, gadget, and odd spot of the week, the phony bidding is becoming more of a problem on eBay than ever before. An in-depth investigation by an Australian retiree, of all people, because they've got plenty of time on their hands, has revealed that fake bids are running rampant on eBay, forcing users to pay inflated prices for items on the auction site.
Are they talking about people who are submitting dummy bids, or are they talking about spammers that don't care that are just
I think it's more the dummy bids type sort of thing. This guy, he was in Sydney, found several instances of shill bidding where phony eBay accounts are used to bid up the price of items to inflate the price by users. So go and register a dodgy account, up the price, do a runner. It's a bit like what the ACCC are doing with the real estate agents at the moment, allegedly.
The problem is if you do that and you accidentally sell it to yourself because you're the last bidder, or the person who's putting in the dummy bids becomes the last bidder, not only do you not sell the item, but you have to pay eBay for the sale of the item.
In the article, though, he's pointed out that the eBay rules allow you to remove the winning bid if you wish, so it then instantly goes to the second highest bidder.
Is that what they call a second chance offer?
I'm not sure if that's what it is, but in the article, jump online, we'll have the link to it somewhere, he explains how all of that's done as well.
Fantastic.
Sometimes you see, this item is available to be relisted for a second chance offer, but I've never used that, but that may be what that is. If you've had experience, let us know. feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Suffering suck attack. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Let's face it, Telstra has a huge PR problem.
It's called the Integrated Public Number Database.
Hopefully that's not what they're talking about.
No.
You block them, do you?
I do.
Yeah, this is what happened, yeah.
This is what happened.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yep.
Good use of technology.
Adam, you're too far gone to be saved now.
Entertaining.
How can you work in IT and not drink coffee?
Informative.
Boffiny, techie propeller head, Vicky.
Independent.
The SMS is not an on-time delivery system.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Now, if you get Inga from Sweden showing her wares.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. Oh, this thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole!
The i2i Stream Audio Streamer lets you stream CD quality audio wirelessly. You can make your computer a wireless jukebox by streaming to your home stereo, or your iPod or MP3 player can become your wireless music remote control when you're broadcasting to your home entertainment system. So what you do is connect a wireless transmitter to any audio source, so your iPod, your MacBook file server, then you connect the wireless receiver to your sound system. It works over 30 feet and you can choose from 7 digital channels.
Excellent.
You can buy online for about $120 the i2i Stream Audio Streamer from i2igear.com.
Okay, so what does it do? It lets you stream all those good things to your to anything, does it?
It's a digital audio streamer, so it comes in two parts. One's a sender, one's a receiver.
Oh, okay.
So if you haven't got a computer network, you can stream an audio stream digitally using this little gadgety thing.
Great idea. How much did you say it was?
About $120.
Oh, bargain.
I thought so.
Every time. All right, well done.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Now, I didn't research this one, but let me type it in quickly. FaceSearch.com. You had an interesting experience with this.
Scary, scary
Adam
stuff.
Turner also had an interesting experience with this. What these people have done...
That's right. We had the gadget on the one of our chat things offline, didn't we? That's why we talked about it.
We did. Now, I've told you the wrong address. Hang on a minute. Let me find it. What this does, it's people that have built a database collecting images that are online of people's faces and looking at the metadata or the file names which contain people's names. So if you search for Andrew McCollum in this FaceSearch search engine...
No, don't do that.
It'll come up with pictures of Andrew's face on the internet.
Scary. That Adam's taken too.
Indeed. Now, look, I thought it was a typo and it's not. The actual URL is FaceSearch. It's face, SAERCH.com. So it's the word search looks like a typo, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Face, SAERCH.com. Search for all the faces of the people online with a slick interface. Find faces online and find them now for free. That's our website of the week.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sake, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Some teenagers might rebel by staying out late, but one 16-year-old who stayed home cost his mum $602.
I know how. That's why I'm laughing.
Jack Featherstone downloaded two movies.
Where was he? He was in Tasmania, wasn't he?
Well, he downloaded Dumb and Dumber, ironically, and Freddy Got Fingered to his laptop, not knowing that the large files would add a hefty $573 to the bill. He downloaded the movies over Three's mobile internet. Whoops. Using a $29 monthly plan. He had 3.5 gigabytes of included downloads with an excess fee of 10 cents per megabyte. However, with single high-definition movies reaching over 4 gigabytes, Jack should have used his wired home broadband. Jack's a great kid, really, his mum said. A nice boy. He doesn't ever do things like this. She added that no one had read the contract's fine print and thought that Three would have called her if there was a problem. Well, from Three's point of view, there is no problem.
No, that's exactly right. Three will only call you when you haven't paid them.
Jack came up with scenarios for how to pay the account himself with his part-time job, but Mum said, no, I'll pay the account this time. We know it will never happen again.
Yeah, well, there you go. So know what your children are doing, or you might get a nice little surprise. It's called Bill Shock.
Better yet, get internet plans that have got shaping rather than excess fees.
Can't do that on a mobile broadband. Well, no, you probably technically can. They just don't do it on a mobile broadband plan, I guess.
But it doesn't help you when you decide to go out and buy your $32,000 tractor, as we heard a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, that's right. The kid bought one online. Yeah, you'd say, no, that wasn't me on eBay. Not at all.
Whoops.
Whoops-a-daisy.
Yep.
All right, you have been listening to Tech Talk Radio. If you missed the newsletter today, yes, it was beyond our control. It might be a little bit thin on the ground in the next little bit, but...
The newsletter?
The newsletter. Okay. A bit under-resourced at the moment. So, anyway, apologies about that. Just watch this space. Enjoy it when the next one comes out. So, until the same time next week, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Thanks for your ears this evening. Thanks for listening to us. Happy birthday, Daniel, and all that sort of stuff. And we'll catch you same station, same time next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panelists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.